Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Yeah, Friday. What's up? Welcome in. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. A football Friday. We are getting you ready for Washington and Cleveland to be played on the lake in Ohio this weekend. Really, really cool stadium if you've never been there. It'll be windy, presumably, but the weather hopefully will be pleasant enough to allow for Washington's offense to try to get on track against a defense that has been susceptible this year. Week 3 in the NFL is underway. Last night, Thursday night football, we got started with the Miami Dolphins and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Danny will be with us in just a little bit, having a little trouble logging in today, so we will get him on the horn in moments. But we can start with that Dolphins-Jaguars performance last night. You heard a lot about that Jacksonville offense and how impressive it was through 2 weeks under Jay Gruden. Gardner Minshew had been having a field day throwing the football around. And I think you saw some good, big, prolific moments from Minshew as a quarterback. You know, we use the word flash all the time with Dwayne Haskins. You saw plenty of that, right? 30 completions, 217 yards early and before garbage time, ended up with 275. Didn't throw a touchdown, did throw a pick. Ended up, you know, playing a game that wasn't good enough to win but wasn't probably the reason why Jacksonville lost. But the story was Miami, who was 0-2. And we went into the game wondering, when are we going to see Tua Tagovailoa? Is Tua going to get a shot early this season if the Dolphins continue to lose and Ryan Fitzpatrick is wildly inconsistent? Well, he threw 3 picks in week 1. Week 2, he bounced back with a couple touchdowns and no picks and was very solid against a good Buffalo team that has a chance to win the AFC East and may well make the playoffs. And in week 3 last night, Ryan Fitzpatrick was sensational. As efficient a performance as you can have as a starting quarterback in this league. In fact, it's going to be tough for anybody that plays the rest of the weekend to have as effective a game at that position as he did. 18 completions and 20 attempts, 160 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I'll say that that was one of those games that was schemed up, I think. It was a game more than anything else, in my opinion, that was designed for Fitzpatrick on Wednesday and Thursday. He was mostly throwing to open receivers. When you complete 18 out of 20, it came pretty easy. You're pitching and catching. So give Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator of the Dolphins, credit for the design last night. But the Dolphins have some players. In the AFC East, the pendulum is swinging up. Everyone kind of assumed that the Patriots were about to crash and burn when Tom Brady left to go to Tampa Bay. And my thought, and I think a lot of people's thought right away, was, well, wait a second. Is Bill Belichick getting in that car and driving to Florida with him? Because if he's still there, they might be okay. Now, they spent most of the offseason pretending like they were going to start Jarrett Stidham, which looked like it could be a disaster that imploded and blew up in their face. But for whatever reason, teams allowed them on the cheap by grabbing some quarters that were under their couch cushions to bring in Cam Newton. Josh McDaniels, who's brilliant, has basically completely reconfigured his offense now to allow for Newton's strengths running the football to take over. And what you have seen already from New England is that they are a contender in that division. They're going to play well enough. They nearly knocked off Seattle, 2-0, one of the better teams in football. And they got a big week one win over Miami. They're in the, going to be in the mix. Buffalo, terrific. Offensively, Josh Allen breaking out. Defensively, they don't make a lot of mistakes. Haven't played as well on that side of the ball as you would expect it for 2 weeks, but they're well coached. Sean McDermott is one of the sharper guys designing defenses in the game. A good head coach, as he's proven as well. But that division is looking up at this point. And the Dolphins, you take away week one, you know, preseason games, weird offseason, some fluky things were going to happen. We said that. They looked like they didn't belong against the Patriots. Since then, they outplayed the unbeaten Bills for much of week two, and they dominated the Jaguars last night. Danny, good morning and welcome to the Grant and Danny radio program.
Hey, dude, I thought I'd just take a few minutes off just to ease into my day. I couldn't be bothered to join you at 10 o'clock.
Well, you worked so hard today. You deserve the break.
You know, it just you've been doing so much. I mean, I sent like an email this morning. I tweeted. I looked up some stats, and I tweeted those stats, and I was like, that's enough of that. Let's take some time. But thank you. Yeah, you're talking Dolphins last night, dude. What team was that? We say we're not going to do the thing, and I always end up doing it. I'm not saying you and me, but everybody in this world, we can't overreact to 1 week. And then especially with all this offseason stuff, and you just touched on it, that Dolphins team looked good. That defense looked good last night. Jacksonville had come in as, you know, the issue wasn't the offense, right? They threw the ball a million times and didn't have anybody with over 50 yards receiving. That was a ridiculously good defensive performance by Miami. Offensively, did whatever they wanted to, putting up points and moving up and down the field. Had the game been different, they could have scored 40, I think, without any shadow of a doubt. That team does not stink. I don't know how good they're going to end up being, but I was pretty impressed with them last night.
Yeah, as well you should have been. So the problem for the Jaguars, and I started to tweet this, and I was like, nobody cares about this thought. I'm not even joking. I was like, so many people last night were just a pain in the ass on Twitter that after the LaVisca Chenault catch, like 4 minutes into the game, I said, I'm good on this for the rest of the night. And I did not tweet again. I was just like, normally I love during the national games kind of throwing out little nuggets and numbers and stuff and getting on next-gen stats. I told a couple guys, I'm like, I am so good on your condescension for the rest of today. I'm leaving here. There's nothing for me here. So, but I say that only to say that I was about to tweet, the Jags are done. You know, they were down 14-0. It's such a big deal when you're a young team with young playmakers and you spot a club a couple of scores early, everything changes. I've seen this 1,000 times. The club starts to press. Those young players start to try to get it all back on, you know, one play and score a 15-point play on a 6-yard completion. And next thing you know, someone's losing a fumble or someone's dropping a catch on the sideline that could have moved the sticks. But they had run 4 plays on offense. So that was the story all week, remember. Jay Gruden's offense is a juggernaut. Wait till you see Gardner Minshew. They'd run 4 plays and kind of had a fluky 3-and-out where they dropped a pass. Gardner Minshew put in the bucket for Conley on the sideline and he dropped it. After running 4 plays, they were down 14-0 when they got the ball back because the Dolphins went 12 plays, 84 yards on the opening drive. Then they got the ball back and went 6 plays, 60 yards. And that's what's going to happen this year. Their defense is horrific, Jacksonville's. It might be one of the worst in football. But you're cooked. So the story will be, to your point, that Miami's defense was great or Jacksonville's offense wasn't good enough. And that's true. But the best way for your defense to have a great game is to get staked to a 14-0 lead at the start of it. Because then you just kind of get to pin your ears back and play with confidence, and you get to maybe take a couple of risks you wouldn't otherwise. But there was plenty of good Miami to go with the bad Jacksonville. Minshew missing a long would-be touchdown pass at one point. But I'm not going to give that opening drive, 12-84, the drive of the game, Danny. I'm going to give it, in fact, to Miami's third drive that started 1st and 10 from their own 25. They go 70 yards on 11 plays with a 5-yard penalty sprinkled in. And the reason I do that is because the only thing harder than starting the game the way that they did with an 84-yard drive is to string together 3 consecutive scoring drives, and they did that. They had 21 points after the first 3 times they touched the ball. The drive of the night brought to you by your local Honda dealer. Time to get to your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. If you don't know about Mike Gesicki, start reading some things. This dude is a beast at tight end for the Dolphins.
Sets up. First and 10 at the 15. Pass is caught. Touchdown, Gesicki. And this is a determined Dolphin team coming in here to Jacksonville. What a start for this offense.
Danny, thought your thoughts on Gesicki last night?
That he is really, really athletic. He's kind of got a little Travis Kelce to him. I mean, not as good, obviously, because there's one of that guy, but it's that same sort of athletic profile, right, where he's big and tall. He doesn't look hulking, but can separate from people, great catch radius. I mean, you know, he had it would have been a tough catch, but one of Fitzpatrick's two incompletions last night ended up hitting him in the left shoulder when he was running a crossing route against the defensive back. But that guy's really impressive, man. There are more and more and more of these guys. I just want Washington to have one. Bring me a Gesicki.
Miles Gaskin looks like the type of back that's going to be like the flavor of a couple of weeks, and then he's just gone forever and never heard from again. But his workload last night was incredible. He got 22 carries, and he did all of 3 yards a carry with that.
Yeah.
Ran for 66 yards, but he caught 5 balls out of the backfield. This game is an example of why. I don't love necessarily getting into the fantasy angle, but this, I think, speaks to reality in real life as well when we talk about running back value. The Dolphins featured back and the focal point of their offense was a seventh-round pick a couple of years removed who meant nothing to them last year, who 3 weeks ago we thought might have been their third back. The Jaguars were led in every category, 2 rushing touchdowns and 6 catches for 83 yards, by a undrafted free agent tailback who, again, showed up at training camp not thinking he was going to make the team. That ball game is kind of indicative of, yes, there are plenty of games where you can turn on and you can watch McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley or Ezekiel Elliott as top 10 picks going ham sandwich, but there's a lot of these games too.
Yeah, the Super Bowl, Raheem Mostert, Damian Williams. Where do those guys come from? Are they high-profile players? For every McCaffrey, for every Saquon Barkley, there's three of these, you know, and the position just churns you out so hard. I mean, James Robinson impressed me. I hadn't really seen much of him running the football. All my highlights or all my Jacksonville Jaguar moments were Minshew throws to open receivers over the course of the first few weeks. But he's not a home run hitter. You know, he's got a little Alfred Morris to him and that he's physical and, you know, always seems to be making yards after contact. But I was impressed with him, especially as a receiver, as the game went on. 6 for 83 when Minshew was checking it down when all that stuff was available. But good player. I mean, you could see why they were comfortable moving on from, I guess you'd overall say, draft bust Leonard Fournette.
Danny is here. The show is at full strength. Next, we get into Washington and Cleveland. First feel on the football team taking on the Browns. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Guys, it's Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevrolet. I've been telling you about them for a while because I've been getting my cars from Lindsay Chevy in Woodbridge for years. Got to know their GM, Paul Smith, many, many years ago, and he took great care of me and said, so I said, you know what, I'm going to ride with this dude until the end of time. I like Paul. He is a good man. I could trust him, and he takes care of our listeners, and that's important to me as well. Let's not forget, it's not just about Paul being a good guy. They got the best discounts as well, and that's a big part of this, right? New Chevy Silverados, heavy and light duty, over 800 available, up to 15,000 off. Camaros, Malibus, Traxxas, up to 8,000 off. Equinoxes, Blazers, Traverses, up to 8,000 off, and you could take it from me. You will love it at Lindsay because they're going to save you more. Shop now and save at lindsaychevy.com or Lindsay Chevrolet in Woodbridge. While you're there, be sure to ask for Paul so that you can get those great deals and then that 106.7, the fan hook as well. You know I love it at Lindsay. You will too. Go find new roads. Two days away from Washington football and the Cleveland Browns. In Ohio, welcome back, Grant and Danny, 106.7. The Fan. Week 3 began last night. It is a football Friday on G&D. First thoughts on the matchup with Cleveland, your first feel on this game with the Browns. Danny, the first thing that comes to mind for me, and I went back and I watched both of Cleveland's games in the condensed NFL.com versions of those contests last night, so in the 12 o'clock hour, got a bunch of thoughts on what I saw from them, but The thing that jumps out at you immediately when you hear Cleveland Browns in 2020, I think, should be this is one of the better running teams in the entire NFL. And
yeah,
you better bring your game face up front to stop the run. And you better bring help to get these guys to the ground. Nick Chubb is one of the great running backs in this league. He's going to win rushing titles. Kareem Hunt might be playing better than him right now, to be completely honest with you, in terms of what he does with his touches. He's outstanding. He could start for 20-plus teams in this league. He's their number two back. But they are number two in rushing yards per play, 5.69. And I think about Washington, I think, well, they've done a pretty good job against the run. But then when you peel back a couple layers, Danny, nobody's tried to run the ball against them. Now, Doug Peterson and the Eagles don't really like to run it that much. And they were throwing the ball way more frequently. Arizona is going to use their passing game as their running game. And while you get some Kenyon Drake out of the shotgun on some of those Chris Thompson-like runs off the edge of their formation, they have not played a team through two games that actually wanted to line up, pull guards and tackles, have a fullback coming downhill like Cleveland does. And that's going to happen this weekend. So we don't really know. Washington's 17th yards per play against the run through 2 weeks. And it's more than anything else, I think, an incomplete because they just haven't been asked to do it yet. Can they stop the run when a team wants to shove the ball down your throat? We'll find out this weekend.
Yeah, and Kyler Murray is responsible for some of those rushing yards. And I mean, you know what it looks like, right? If a team can't stop the run, it's just mind-numbing to watch 6, 7, 8 yards per carry get ripped off. You just feel anecdotally like they're pretty good against the run. And I'm with you, but the numbers, I think, as the season goes on, will start to bear that out. Here's my focus, and it's going to be my focus. Washington's offense, specifically Washington's first half offense. Here is their drive log, 13 possessions for Washington's offense. Punt, 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 miss field goal. Punt, punt, touchdown, a touchdown in the first half. That's after the Fabian Moreau interception in week number one. Punt, punt, fumble, punt, punt, punt. 10 of those 13 drives are over in 5 plays or less, meaning they got a first down in one of their first couple and then went 3 and out. 4 plays or less, 8 of 13 of those drives, and just about half, 6 of their 13 first half drives are 3 and outs. It was an awesome, fun story when they came back against Philadelphia, again, by virtue of that interception, and got themselves going a little bit. That was exciting and that was fun. That's not sustainable. You can't just be down 20 to nothing every first half, 17 nothing every first half. They've got to find a way to get some early offense against Cleveland. When they line up and try to play, when they don't do hurry up, when they don't go against garbage time defenses or prevents or whatever, they haven't amounted jack and or squat. That's got to change. That, to me, is going to be the story.
Yeah, they're going to have to get something going in the first half, because part of what you keep hearing when we are asked, or we're asking folks or coaches in press conferences or answering questions about Dwayne Haskins, well, you know, it's hard to figure out what he is if he's always playing from behind. Okay, that's true.
All right.
Part of why they're playing from behind is because they can't do anything on offense for an entire half. It's not like the Eagles and the Cardinals have just come out and worked their defense over. They got big takeaways in both of those games in the first half to set the offense up in great position. If you think back to the Arizona game, they had a first and 10 from the plus 19-yard line when they were down 7-0. If you just kick on first down right then and there, just kick on first down, it's 7-3, you're down 4 points.
Instead, yeah, that's your second best offensive drive of the first half of the season if you just kicked on first down.
No kidding. I mean, it would have been the second drive that you got points on out of 13. Instead, you know, you first and second down, don't do a whole lot. Third and long, you get sacked and you lose a fumble, and Arizona's got the ball right back where they started as if nothing ever happened. But while it is true that, yes, it is going to be tougher to determine what Dwayne Haskins is if they are playing from down 17-0 or down 20-0, the last 2 weeks. Part of how they get down is he's starting slowly. And he's going to start slowly plenty with this offense, with the lack of weaponry, with how precise he's going to have to be because guys aren't always going to be open, with the fact that the running game has been either ineffective or very pedestrian. You know, they had an early 9-yard run that was a beautiful run from Antonio Gibson against Arizona, but for the most part it's been 2-3 here and there, and they've been behind the sticks. But they've got to start faster. So that's on the offense. Mm-hmm. The defense can't help you there. They've given you the ball. That's not going to keep happening. In fact, there's a really good chance for the first time in 3 weeks, you're not going to get a first and 10 inside the opponent's 40-yard line. That doesn't happen every single week. Now, they've squandered those opportunities, and they've done nothing with them, Danny, but you're right. I mean, that's a key, I guess. You're thinking first thought is actually introspective about this group. You know, when I look at this matchup, though, I just think about that running game. And Nick Chubb, who is so physical and wears you down, and then when you start to get fatigued, And you feel like, okay, well, at least he's got to be tiring too. I mean, they're feeding him the football.
There comes
then
the other
Kareem
guy.
Hunt comes off the bench, fresh, running like it's the first series of the game, and you got your hands on your hips and you're completely spent. And that's what happened against Cincinnati. But for the Browns, they need game script to do that. They couldn't do that in the first game because they were playing from behind. And that's where I think our two ideas marry into one another.
Exactly.
If you can get off to a faster start and you're not down 10-0, 13-3, well, then they're able to run the ball and be balanced. But they'll have to throw it if you could actually somehow make a big play. Maybe it's a Steven Sims kick return. They gave up a long kick return, 39 yards, to start the game against the Bengals. You know, maybe it's a 75-yard first play throw to Terry McLaurin. Whatever happens to kind of break the seal here offensively, you got to put the Browns on their heels and not just let them call the plays that Kevin Stefanski thinks he'll be able to right now.
And that's kind of my point here. That's where I'm going with it, is you just can't have these A deficits. B, just the defense is good for Washington. You can't continue to just put them in bad spot after bad spot after bad spot just by going 3 and out half the time in the first half, or 4 and out, 80 or whatever it is, 75% of the time, or have your drives end in 2 minutes or less constantly. You've got to find a way to have the football and sustain something so that your defense isn't just exposed time after time. Because this week, you're right, that two-headed monster of a running game will salt the game away lickety-split.
800-636-1067 is the number if you want to hop in. That's 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. We'll open up the AAA always-on-call listener lines. When you first think about this matchup Sunday, Washington and Cleveland, what comes to mind? We want to get your analysis on this showdown with the Browns. We're Grant and Danny.
We're playing some pretty talented teams right now, and this team's got as much talent as anybody I've seen.
Ron Rivera, yeah, there's no question. The Browns' skill positions, and with their revamped offensive line now, signing Jack Conklin, drafting Jedrick Wills, I would even say their offensive line included, they're as good from a personnel standpoint on offense as anybody Washington will play this year. But after two games, you've played two more finesse offenses. This is a ground and pound you group. I mean, their misdirection, if you will, where they're going to try to trick you is in play action on bootlegs to try to go down the field. This is about as old school, shove it down your gullet, as you're going to find it. And we've already determined, Danny, that Chase Young, Daron Payne, John Allen, Montez Sweat, Ryan Kerrigan, Matt Ioannidis, Tim Settle, Ryan Anderson, that eight-man rotation up front, they can rush the quarterback with anybody.
Absolutely.
But we're about to find out, when you know one of the better running teams in the league is going to run it, are they also able to stop the run?
Yeah, and you're gonna see them change the launch point for Baker Mayfield. Can you handle that? Can you stay disciplined going up against some of that play action? Because that's where their bread is butter in terms of Cleveland's offense. To me, Mayfield is the key to this thing, obviously. I mean, the quarterback being the key is not terrific analysis, but he's up and down. He's been inconsistent. He's got all the weapons. He's got protection. If he's good, if he's upright in this game, Cleveland's going to win it. You know, just if the game script goes as these first couple have gone, they're in a better position than these other two teams that Washington has played to salt the game away because of that two-headed monster in the backfield. But are you so concerned about that Beckham gets deep? Or, how many third-down conversions is Jarvis Landry going to account for this week? They really haven't unleashed Austin Hooper at all this season, barely targeted. That guy's a weapon. So to me, Cleveland's got one more answer on offense than maybe Washington does on defense, especially if the defense just has to be out there for hours at a time, which has kind of been the script in the first half of both these first two games.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very revealing game for the Browns, maybe more so than Washington, to be honest with you. Like, if the good guys win this weekend, we'll all be excited and happy, and they'll be 2-1 through three, and that's going to be thrilling because
yeah.
I think a lot of people have had them at best 1-2 and probably more likely 0-3 when they did their preseason projections. However, we don't know what the Browns are at all yet. Like, they played one good team, they got demolished in Baltimore in week one. They played one really bad team in the Bengals, and they won a close game on the scoreboard, but I think it was a lot more handily held with about 8 minutes to go. Having rewatched that game last night, it was a little garbage time stuff from the Bengals. So it is this Cleveland opponent quality? Is this a litmus test? I don't know that we know that yet. It's probably too early in the year, but we'll know a lot more about them after Sunday. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. Bernie's in Virginia on line two. What's up, Bernie?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I agree. Listen, the defense can get five sacks and an interception, and Cleveland still scores 31. So you don't have to win the game on offense. You just can't be what you've been the previous 2 weeks. You can't be down two scores in the second quarter and have the fans and everybody thinking, if they don't score on this drive, the game's basically over, which is what, you know, I thought that in Philadelphia. They came back and won, and I thought that with Arizona. You got to scheme it up. I understand you don't have the talent, but they've got to find a way to keep drives going, if nothing else, so Cleveland starts inside their 20, not at midfield. So, I mean, they're going to have to do something to, and also keep the defense fresh, because I can see Mayfield getting sacked on one play. The next play, Chubb rips off a 60-yard touchdown run. So I know you got a lot of calls. Thanks, gentlemen.
I hear you. Appreciate you. The one thing I'll say about keeping the defense fresh is there's not a deeper group up front than the Browns will be facing this week. And I don't just mean the five first-round picks, but a guy like Ryan Anderson is good against the run. He's the eighth guy in this group. Now, Ryan Kerrigan is very solid against the run. He's been playing right around 22, 23 snaps. Way fewer than I'd like to see him play. But when you go to your second group, where I'm looking at the Bengals and they had no answer in the second half, and Chubb and Hunt were taking turns basically whacking the pinata for 7, 8, 9 yards at a time, I don't see that happening as easily against Washington, because you're four D linemen deeper than the Bengals are probably. Let's go to Dre in Manassas on line one. Dre, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Listen, I don't know whether or not teams still design their team to try to win the conference, but when I look at the football team and I look at our defensive line, to me they're designed. They're big. They're stout. They're designed to stop the run from like Dallas and the Giants. So I think, you know, they're not like Seattle when they won the championship a couple of years ago. Thin, small guys, really quick. So when I look at this game, I think Cleveland's offense plays directly into our defense. I literally, you remember when, you know, in Avengers, and when Iron Man says, well, we have a Hulk. I literally look at the game and say, well, we have an Ionitis. I have that much faith in him. Like, when he comes in the field, these guys, I mean, even his name just exudes strength. So I really think from a defensive standpoint, you know, I don't want to say checkmate, game's over, but I really think they play into our hands. From an offensive standpoint, I would say this. I think I've seen enough thing. Maybe, you know, I'm too early, but in my mind, you know, a lot of people, the argument is Haskins doesn't have enough pieces around him to make him look good. But I'm starting to think, you know, it's not Haskins. It's not the pieces around Haskins. It's Haskins. You know, I don't think Haskins is right to make the pieces around him look good, because I've seen enough from our new running back. He looks really good. He looks the part. Obviously, McLaurin, he looks the part. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, I mean, he's going to come around. This may be the game. But I think it's time for people to stop saying that Haskins, it's not the pieces of the problem. It's Haskins that might be the issue.
Thank you, Dre. Appreciate it, dude. So, GP, let me say this. Cleveland has a coaching staff. Cleveland has people that are really smart in their organization as well, right? So they're not just going to go, we should probably physically try to push Washington around early in the ballgame. They're very capable of spreading you out and throwing the bleep out of it. And that's what I would do. There's no way I'm just going to let John Allen and Ionitis and company eat early on. Now, if my game script says salt the game away later on, well, I could force feed some of the run. But would you? Would you line up and try to pound it on Washington? I certainly wouldn't. I would go after their secondary. I would check some double moves. I would, you know, make sure Landry gets involved early and often. To me, this is a spread out type game. If I'm Cleveland, I think their offense has enough diversity to do that.
Well, I would do what I do best, always, honestly. More so than necessarily like coaching against my opponent, unless my opponent's great. If my opponent's Baltimore, then yes, I'm going to try to find their deficiency. With Washington, I think they can move the ball either way they want to, probably in this game. That having been said, to your point, having watched their games last night, Baker Mayfield's extremely comfortable when they get him in rhythm in the shotgun with the ball coming out quick. Now, he locks on pre-snap, it seems like, to one guy, and they simplify some reads, and it might just be an out route for 7 yards or a slant here. You know, he's not necessarily in the pocket a long time going through progressions, but that would be my plan early in the game, absolutely. You can salt the game away. You can come back to the run. It will be there for you very likely whenever you need it to be. But you look at their weapons. Odell Beckham Jr. is still a top 10 wide receiver in football. Jarvis Landry as a possession threat. You know, he was a slot guy in Miami. He's not quite that anymore in Cleveland. But he is a terrific player who's going to be difficult to defend. Higgins is a good third wide receiver, their former fifth-round pick. The kid Kadarrell Hodge, who caught a couple of balls downfield last week, has very good speed. They got him off waivers from the Rams. At the tight end position, you mentioned that they signed Austin Hooper. They drafted Harrison Bryant in the fourth round at that spot. That was a guy that a lot of Washington fans wanted. And I'll just tell you, Danny, that Harrison Bryant, he only caught a ball that I saw this past week. It was one of those things where I had to look it up on our lads. I had to pull up their depth chart and say, who's number 88? Mm-hmm. He caught the ball, and he was flying. It was a tight end running like a wide receiver, and I thought, who is this guy, and how is he not more involved? Oh, that's Harrison Bryant, their fourth-round pick. They can't get the ball to Hooper, so they certainly aren't getting the ball to Harrison Bryant. But my point is, yes, they could absolutely spread you out. They don't necessarily major in that, though. They traded for a fullback, Andy Janovich. Remember, Stefanski was the Vikings coordinator last year. They used the fullback C.J. Ham a lot. Like, it's a lot of power eye. It's a lot of split back backfields where they're going play action for their deep shots out of that. But if they want or need to, they can absolutely go gun, go empty, four, five receivers, and they did that against the Bengals. What do you guys think of this matchup with Cleveland? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny.
And that's really where we are right now. Just, you know, each time we play, we should see improvement where we want to see improvement. That's what was so disappointing about last week. You know, we made some pretty good gains by the end of the game against Philadelphia, but then we turn around and we regressed and didn't play well for a half. So, you know, again, we've got to start faster. That's one of the things that we most certainly have talked about as a coaching staff on in all three phases. Because, again, in all three phases, in the first two games, you know, we started slow and hurt ourselves.
Hopefully Scott Turner's got a first 15 script that gets Washington some points on an opening drive for the first time this season. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. 13 drives in the first half, 10 punts, one touchdown, a missed field goal, and a lost fumble. That's the list so far for Washington. We are trying to get you our first feel on Washington and the Browns. We're taking your calls as well at 800-636-1067. On line three, Tony's in Long Island. Tony, when you look at Cleveland as a matchup, what do you think?
Hey, guys. I'm looking at Ron Rivera's confidence in Dwayne Haskins. Follow me on this. So, obviously, we looked at that play, you know, that call that he made last week when he decided to kick the field goal instead of going for the touchdown. And truth be told, I mean, there's really no way to look at it other than that's a really bad call by an NFL head coach to kick a field goal there, because you're really not moving the needle in terms of increasing the chances to win the football game. So that's a real big head scratcher. But if you really look at it as an extension of, is this Ron Rivera's confidence in his offense and to an extent his quarterback at that moment? And Rivera really wasn't very he didn't really speak glowingly of Haskins. He was very political about it, but he wasn't very happy with Haskins' play after the second game. And, you know, on a weekend where Dallas makes the most historic comeback, you know, probably a lot of us have seen, so, you know, 15 points under 4 minutes, and our coach is basically waving the white flag, giving up a football game, you know, saying for the sake of, you know, we're rebuilding, guys. He cannot say that any longer. You can't continue to just lose games, wave white flags, and say, we're just going to lose this football game because we're not very good. There's only so many games you can actually say that to the fan base and to the organization and to the players. So I know we went for it on fourth down versus the Eagles, and that was a really gutsy call, but that was a running play. I want to see a play at some point in this game versus the Browns where Rivera is showing confidence in Haskins and in the offense late in the fourth quarter, saying, go win the football game. Try to win the football game in our own territory or in Brown's territory. He's got to show that confidence at some point. And to a larger extent, Haskins has to earn that confidence. So that's what I'm looking for in this game, guys.
Tony,
thanks. Appreciate you.
You know, I hadn't really thought of it from the perspective of Haskins, to be honest, but I guess everything that Rivera does all year in some way will reflect
connects
how he feels about the team. But there's – it's glaringly obvious to me, and I think all of his decisions to this point have screamed he has no confidence in his offense. I haven't necessarily taken that as a referendum on Haskins yet. You know, that's a game where Brandon Scherff got hurt, and, you know, maybe you don't feel great about the protection, or it's very early and he was screaming into a megaphone for anyone who was listening before the year started. It's going to take a while for our offense to be good. Is that in some way indicative of how he feels about Haskins? I don't really know. But Tony's right about one thing. all of the decisions, whether it was the not calling the timeouts, the kicking the field goals so they didn't get shut out, pretty much everything he's done through two games, if you read between the leaves, is our offense is not very good. I'm going to try to protect them as best as possible.
Yeah, that's right. What's the phrase? Like, you think of it's a process when you talk about one group. It's not a process with the defense. That's not a process. That's a good group. They're good. They're ready. They're NFL caliber. I don't know where they'll end up ranked, and I think they're going to be screwed over by the offense, but that's a top 10 caliber defense right now this minute.
He's not saying that about defense, is he? He's not saying, by the end of this year, we should be okay at that side of the ball. Like, you don't get that narrative.
The offense is a process, and we know it. And right now, the process stinks. It's among the lowest in terms of average yards per drive, length of drive. Their scoring percentage isn't terrible because of what they've done in the second half of games. Well, it is terrible, but it's not the worst, I guess, is the better way to phrase it. But they've got to find a way to get something early, whether it's going hurry up from jump street, whether it's nothing but shotgun, whatever trick you got to do to give yourself an opportunity to have those meaningful moments that Tony's talking about. I think that's as important as anything. Win, lose, or draw for a team that is in process, that is in rebuild. I need more meaningful moments than garbage time second halves to pad some stats and make everybody feel better. I want a fourth quarter moment where it's sink or swim. I want a fourth down and four where you've got to convert something and they're blitzing seven guys. I want all that stuff for Haskins' sake and this franchise's sake as well.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, a huge second hour ahead. John Hansen, who's as good a fantasy expert as there is, to give us some nuggets on some of the players who could have big weeks around the NFL. He's at 11. Plus at 11:30, John Clayton, the longtime ESPN analyst now with the Washington Post, to preview some of the best games of week three. You're listening to The Fan.
Could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.